Next we have Dion Wiggins. Do you have to prepare electronics up here? I do appreciate that actually confirmed for me one thing. I knew at the year 2000 I stopped being moralistic and actually become wise. I'm very, very happy that confirmed my thinking on that. Did you need this or not?
It's on there somewhere.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, great. Dion Wiggins, talk about machine translation in two languages.
Okay, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for the time and opportunity to present today. My background, I come from a company many of you will know in the past, Gartner. And that's where I met Les and had the pleasure of terrorizing many companies across the region with our insights and knowledge. When I was at Gartner, we were traveling around a lot, and my partner Bob rang me up one day and he said, I've just finished a meeting with the Minister of ICT in Indonesia. You won't believe what he told me. It's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. I said, what did he say? He said, when's Microsoft going to fix the internet? There's not enough Indonesian content. That was actually what he said as a minister of ICT. And we all had a chuckle over it and went away. I came back to Bob a few hours later. I said, I think I've just had a bit of an epiphany. How much content is there on the Indonesian internet? And he said, actually, today there's about 800,000 pages of content. This is 7 or 8 years ago. Well, what if we translated all of Wikipedia from English into Indonesian? What would that do? Well, the reality was it would have tripled the size of the Indonesian internet in a day. Okay, pretty scary when you think about it. Now, obviously, that's not the case today, and things are growing and changing. But certainly, that's moved things along. Having access to knowledge in other languages. And my company actually went and translated all of Wikipedia from English into Thai, 3.6 million pages with the Thai government. Now, Les and I have had a conversation a number of times about a concept called solution thinking. I just want to put a question to you to explain this concept. A car has brakes. Why does it have brakes? Anyone want to have a go at the answer? Why does a car have brakes? Safer is close. Anyone else?
Keep people driving happy.
That's not bad. Many people will say so it can stop, but that's the action of braking. The real reason cars have brakes is so you can go fast. Right. That's the real reason. It's quite simple. So let's look at this idea and this concept. Why do we seek knowledge? Okay, it could be to understand. That would be the obvious one. It could be to make decisions, but I think the real answer is to take action. Right? It's not, you don't want to understand, you want to take action on your understanding. Right? Now, when we built the portals and built my company, one of our goals was that language should not be a barrier to knowledge. Okay? Well, in this case, language should not be a barrier to action. So we're creating knowledge or insight or understanding so that you can take action. But if that information is in a language you don't understand, you've got a huge challenge. Okay, so we're heading into an age, and you might have heard this term pointed around a bit, the internet of everything. My shoes tell me how far I walked, how many calories I burnt walking around. My train is connected, I know the schedules real time. People's cars, TVs, phones. Plants can tell you when they need feeding. Cows can tell you how much milk per teat, almost, that you're getting. It gets to that level of granularity. Okay? This is a whole new definition of connectivity. So what happens when we connect the world and wake it up? Well, first of all, we're buried in information. Doesn't mean we have any more insight into it. We just have information. Data volume is growing at a scary rate. Worldwide IP traffic will quadruple by 2015. By 2015, 3 billion people will be online. 15 billion intelligent devices will be connected to the internet. 15 billion. That's more than a couple each. Okay. 35 trillion gigabytes of data. All of this keeps growing. Okay, this grows faster and it's doubling every 18 months. It just continues to grow. Look at the devices that are out there today. 1 billion smartphones and 5 billion cell phones. Now think about how soon those cell phones are going to pass their expiry date and what follows them. It's going to be smartphones. They're getting faster, cheaper, better. In countries like India, the cell phone has already become the dominant device for access, surpassing PCs. That's a global trend that's rapidly accelerating. So more data. Does that mean there's more to translate? Well, here's a scary thought for you. In the last 2 years, 90% of all data that has ever existed was created. In the last 2 years alone. That's the volume of increase in data. More devices are creating more information that continues to baffle us. Right? We're getting all this information, 15 petabytes of new information is being created every day. That's about the equivalent of 20 million four-drawer filing cabinets filled with text. And that's five times more data than in 2008. Google Translate translates more in 1 day than all human translators in 1 year, globally. Doesn't mean it's very good, but it's obviously useful. People are able to gain an understanding of lots of content and information that they wouldn't have otherwise been able to access. Common Sense Advisory is the leading research group in this space. So last year, their revenue numbers for the industry, for the professional translation industry, were $33.42 billion. If you do some math and divide that by 365 days and 10 cents a word, it works out that human translators are translating just a tiny fraction of 1% of that new text that's being created every day. Almost nothing. And you could argue, how much should be translated? Let's just say 1%. All that does is knock off two zeros. It's still a tiny fraction of 1% every day that's being translated by humans. That leaves a huge portion untranslated. So what is translation-worthy content? I guess that has to be asked. So with automation, we can expand what we're able to translate. The same budget, but things are growing. Okay. It's not uncommon today for many of our customers to double or triple the amount of content that's translated professionally with machine and human together instead of human only, and spend the same amount of money that they were spending before. Okay, social media is going to play a huge role. But don't just think of Facebook if you think about social media. If you go to all these different countries, and of course China, very well known, there is no Facebook technically. Right, you've got leading social networks. And this revolves around a term you're going to hear a lot more of, big data. Big data means volume, velocity, variety, and variable. Let's look at some sort of stats there. 30 billion pieces of content were added to Facebook in the last month by 600 million users. Zynger processes a petabyte of content for gamers every day. 2 billion videos were watched on YouTube yesterday. And the average teenager sends 4,672 text messages a month, whether it be Skype or Instant Messenger or SMS. And it's pretty insane when you add it all up. There were 32 billion searches performed last month just on Twitter alone. Right, these volumes may sound astounding. Now imagine if that was spanning greater numbers of languages, and it goes up significantly. We're getting translation streams, streams that just continually feed us data. So Twitter, Facebook are good examples, but there's many in the business space as well. We're doing a lot more in the space of e-discovery and data mining. How about knowing that your customers in Korea didn't like your product when it shipped? But they loved it in Japan by monitoring media and content and streams coming through. Many of you would have noticed the lawsuit not long ago between Apple and Samsung. Our technology was used behind the scenes translating hundreds of thousands of emails from Korean into English for Apple's lawyers to pore over. Right? They didn't want to pore over them in Korean. And to be frank, the tools didn't support searching and mining the way they wanted to in Korean. They did have those tools in English. So 10 years of Samsung's emails is a heck of a lot of data when you think of a company that size. Patents. We do, for LexisNexis alone, in each of the languages, Chinese, Japanese, Korean, French and German, 500 million words a day of patents, translating them into English. Right? This knowledge is not accessible without machine translation. So e-discovery gets quite scary, the sheer volume of information, but also means that you have to start asking things about data retention and how you handle that knowledge and information. For the patent space, it gets particularly interesting. If I use the LexisNexis example again, 13 million historical Japanese patents. If a human translator had translated that or tried to, it would have taken 152,257 years to translate. And it would have cost about $40 billion at market rates. Instead, it cost them less than $500,000 and they did it in a month. And then they keep doing it. As the engines improve in quality, they run it again. Now, there's a saying, I'm not perfect, but parts of me are excellent. You've probably heard that, or maybe you've seen it on a t-shirt, right? Our translations aren't perfect, but parts of them are certainly excellent. In the case of LexisNexis, the terminology was twice as accurate as a human translator, even though the grammar was not as good. And when you want discoverability in search engines, you're focusing on terminology. So being able to mine and understand data, but having the key parts that are the most important accurate, even more accurate than if a human had done it, is a game changer. Now, we're focusing on the top and the bottom of this pyramid. The top is the human space, and the bottom is the space that's just beginning to be tapped. And this part is very key to knowledge management overall. The technology is maturing very rapidly. This concept has been around for a long time. The first machine translation concepts were born in the 1940s. A guy called Warren Weaver, who worked for the equivalent of the FBI within the US military of the day, said, "That's not Russian, that's English encrypted. If I have enough data comparable in both languages, I should be able to decrypt it." And that's the birth of modern translation today. So you would have seen Babelfish on the internet in the past, which is pretty rough. That's a rules-based technology. And then things went flat for a while. Google came along and they switched from their Sistran backbone, which is what drove Babelfish, to a statistical approach similar to ours. And we're all now heading in towards what's called hybrid, where we do things like syntax, context, and many other things. Our tools today are already at a level where they can understand the difference between a White House and the White House. Right? To understand the whole sentence, no, they can't do that yet, but that's on the drawing boards. So we went through, in the early days, in the 40s and 50s and 60s, experimental. Next stage was GIST-based, and then finally near-human, which is where we're at today. We do a lot of translation for companies like TripAdvisor, Expedia, Travelocity, and so on, for their hotel reviews. Millions and millions of words. Now, quality is not as important there. Doesn't have to be the exact translation. So in English, we could say, the bed was dusty, and in French, it comes out, the bed was dirty. The message is conveyed. Nothing is really lost. It's not an exact translation, but it's still 100% acceptable translation. So we're getting to that level where it's almost as good as a human, but would you use it to translate medical documents? No. You'd have a human involved to at least verify it. Okay, if you look at the Gartner-style hype cycle, there was a lot of research in the 40s and 50s. They had a thing called the Georgetown experiment. Then they had a thing called the LPAC report, where it said, we've invested millions of dollars here, and we've got zero, and trashed the entire industry for 20 years. Nobody got funding for 20 years of research. In recent years, things like MOSES has come along, which is open source. Our chief scientist is the main guy behind that. And you got Google switching to statistical. But the most important tipping point for our industry was when Microsoft and Google started charging for commercial use. Before that, even though we were better quality, it was hard to justify paying for machine translation when somebody was giving it away for free. So it assigned a value. But we're heading now into mainstream use. You already see it on your phones, in many devices, on the web, embedded in tools. This is becoming mainstream very rapidly at a good enough for most purposes level. So let's look at some of these translations. So let's be honest to begin with. Whether human or machine, wherever there's translation, there will be errors. A few years ago, Obama, when he first got elected, went over to Russia and he handed over a symbolic gesture, a big red button. And the button was to symbolize reset. And that's what it said engraved on the bottom of it, or so he thought in Russian. It actually said overcharged. Right? They'd used a dictionary, a common mistake that many people make. So there are multiple ways to say things, and multiple meanings can come from that. So not a good start. So machine translations, you know, they can often make you laugh, but the reality is human translations like those can actually make you cry. Humans make errors just as bad or worse in many cases. Here's one of my favorites. Can you envisage this conversation? Can you go and paint diesel fuel in Arabic on the side of that truck, please? That's exactly what they did, quite literally. And then they couldn't even spell Arabic right. Okay, how about this one? The Welsh says, I'm not in the office at the moment. Please send any work to be translated. So they literally mailed no entry for heavy goods vehicles, residential sites only, and asked to be translated to Welsh. The autoresponder replied on the email. They took the output of the autoresponder and put it on the sign. Nobody checked it. Here's one in Chinese. Translate server error. Okay, this goes on all the time. Now, these mistakes don't happen because of machines. They're happening because of humans being lazy. But in order for translation to work well and efficiently, a machine plus human approach is needed. But machines need to be smarter and humans need to be smarter. The word how is an interesting word. Try how phrases in Google. How do I love thee, get a passport, put this gently, or live without you? That's Google's suggestions. How about how do you take a screenshot? No, get pink eye. How do we see color? Account for me. How do they do it? How do they test for flu? All of those kinds of things. If you keep expanding out different ways of saying how, it's stunning the different contexts that can come up just from those three words. How do you get HIV? Or saying it more sort of sophisticated, we have things like how do individuals develop autoimmune diseases? Now these are Google's recommended by frequency and statistics phrases. So this is the context that Google assigns to essentially the same thing. How do something or how can something? But it's looking at the words around it to determine what you're most likely looking for. Translation works the same way. It's looking at the words around it to determine what you're most likely translating in terms of context. The phrase, I went to the bank. Most people would think I went to the money bank, but you could have banked your car into a turn, banked my plane into a dive, swam to the riverbank. So without the context of the other words around it, you can't understand. And that understanding is crucial. So, context is key. Time is also another key element. I love this slide. This is one of my favorite slides. So, you look at it from rock concert evolution. In the 60s, it was like, yeah, man. Right? Then in the 80s, we got a bit angrier. Right? And we got more angry in the 90s. And today, we take photos. right? So things change, context change, and understanding that context over time, not just the words around it, becomes critical. So machine translation, it's a bit of a dirty word to many people. The abbreviation's MT. Now, many of you have looked at MT over many years and look at it as empty promises. It's failed. It's been a very long time coming. Right, so why does an industry that spent 50 years failing to deliver on its promises still exist even? It's a very valid question. The answer is really simple. There's an infinite demand. It's never gone away. It's been well-defined and it continues to grow. What was missing was quality. So MT promised a lot of things, just like McDonald's does. Here's a photo on the left of the promo burger. And this was my graphics designer's best representation, most attractive angle of an actual burger. Nothing like it. The other interesting thing is if you actually took the promo burger, it doesn't fit in the box. Right? That was the world of MT for a very long time. We promised a lot. Things have changed, I'm glad to say. We've evolved from carving the Rosetta Stone, and we've taken mindset and evolved that to the next level. We were automating with people crowdsourced around the world post-editing, doing things like monolingual translation, which I'll talk about a little bit more later, which is a bit of an oxymoron in a way, sounds like it, and automating the whole workflow. So to understand what translation is to the real world of business, translation automation is not just the translation part, it's data extraction and conversion, different encodings. I mean, many of you in this room would have dealt with Chinese Big Five, GB18030, and various other encodings, right? All of those things have to be dealt with. It's the same letter, but it looks different in data. So human resource management, project management, terminology management, all of these things. Our tools recently for Dell, they failed on terminology management. And so on their website, they had two port switch, dual port switch, and double port switch. They all mean the same thing. We were able to normalize it in French to everything reading the equivalent of two port switch. So we were able to actually make their French content from English higher quality. Now, many are worried that translation tools and automation are going to put humans out of work. This is simply not the case. However, human translators will evolve, and in doing so, they'll benefit from automated tools. As we talked about big data earlier, the volume of data is growing dramatically. Humans simply cannot keep up, no matter how hard they try. Every human on the planet could be a translator working 24 hours a day, and they couldn't keep up. Right? So let's look at the evolution of the automotive industry as a comparative. You've got your horse and cart was replaced by the horseless carriage. Well, we immediately doubled the workforce. Some poor guy walking out the front with a bell and a lantern saying, look out, here comes a horseless carriage. Right? We just added more people. Then we got into production lines, spin-off industries like fuel, energy, service industries, R&D, customization, mass production, all of those things. Well, translation's much the same. It's spinning off into all sorts of different angles. Service industries for quality assurance, localization, and many other things. Now, I use the term localization just now. It's very different to translation. Let me give you an example from Microsoft. When in 1996, Microsoft launched their first version of Microsoft Office in Arabic, it was immediately banned for 6 months in Saudi Arabia. It was translated beautifully, but it had a picture of a pig in the clip art. That reason alone was enough to ban it for 6 months. They didn't localize the product, they just translated it. Since then, all Microsoft clip art's now in web-based and online. Right, so they make things easier. But you can see these things evolve. Translation speed is changing. A professional translator will translate at 2,000 to 3,000 words a day. Our fastest customers are getting up to 23,000 words a day with machine translation and then human post-editing. Okay, typical is somewhere between 6,000 and 15,000 words a day. Now, there's many reasons not to adopt MT. The first is they believe that Google's as good as it gets, nobody can beat Google. Well, that's true for scale, but not quality. Okay, when you focus on quality, you get a big difference. Perception of quality. So it should be perfect, shouldn't it? Therefore, it's not good enough. Then you have another one, perception of quality. The opposite of number two, human resistance. A machine can never deliver human quality. I'm a human, I'll always be better. Well, I can show you very clearly that machine plus human nearly every time delivers better quality than human only, especially on large projects, because multiple humans have different writing styles, different preferred terminology, many other things. Machine translating things and then human proofing means you get less variation and more consistent terminology. Perception of quality, again, is out of the box versus customize. And customize is important. Our technology, for example, I can take the same piece of text and make it read like Harry Potter or The Economist. And finally, the perception that it's got to be machine or human. The correct approach in most cases is machine and human. Also, quality is a factor of purpose. So for document search and retrieval, terminology is the most important thing. Knowledge base, if I've got a document in Vietnamese that's terrible grammar, but it lets me fix my router, even though it's pure machine translation, I've achieved my goal of fixing my router versus having nothing. Or learning English. Okay, various other reasons. Now, our technology lets you do different writing styles. So people think automotive, but what about Honda and Toyota or Ferrari? They all have different writing styles of their own. Then what about marketing versus user manuals versus technical engineering manuals? All of these are different writing styles. This is something that the generic solutions like Google and so on can't do today. If you look down the bottom, you'll see a Spanish sentence, and then you'll see the same sentence twice in English. One in business style and one in children's book style. They mean the same thing. That's the difference. Okay, that's the level of control, and that's important because you want to be able to post-edit that. And if you're doing human effort, you want the least amount of effort possible in order to publish, not converting it from a kid's writing style to economist writing style yourself. Okay, we're getting a lot of upstarts in our industry. These are changing over time, but we're getting companies come in that are low quality, fast and cheap, and they're undermining the industry as a whole, and that's going to take a few years to shake out. But by the year end 2015, the leading language service providers in the industry are going to be translating more in 1 year than their entire previous 5 years combined. That's taking a machine plus human approach and getting 200, 300, 400, 500% productivity gains. But despite this growth, there is an acute human translator shortage. Yet everybody's screaming, you're going to be putting us out of work. It's quite an interesting paradox to manage expectations and manage the market and educate. So the supply is shrinking. Overall, it's getting smaller and smaller. People are leaving because the prices are coming down. Yet the demand is going up. Something has to shake out, and that will over the next 2 or 3 years. So by the end of 2015 in our industry, there's going to be more demand for translators than ever before, but their roles will have to change. There will be specialists in different areas, and they will focus in those areas and grow. We also have maturing end customers. Today, most bulk translation is done by language service providers. So Dell, IBM, Microsoft, many others do their translation through different service providers. They don't have it in-house. Very few do. Many of the larger companies are beginning to get smarter, and they're bringing the machine translation element and the ownership of that in-house, and then only going to the language service providers for the post-editing side. Retranslation is also going to become common. Take knowledge base. You have 100,000 articles, but really only 10% are accessed on a regular basis. Well, going out there and machine translating everything and then progressively editing the 10%, but putting it up immediately means every 1% that you edit, retranslate all the content, the system learns from your corrections and gets better. It gets smarter from your edits. and monolingual translation. So monolingual translation is interesting. Don't look at the source language at all. Take the raw machine translation and edit it. Now, you're not going to do that for medical, but you can do that for things like hotel reviews and things like that. So different content matters. Now, Les has asked me to talk a little bit about cloud, and I've got about 30 seconds left, so I'll do the best I can. We are hosted in Singapore, US, and Germany. And we occasionally host in other places as markets require. Our core infrastructure is in Singapore. It's ISO 27001 certified. That allows us to get a lot of work done that is in a process and in a location that is very secure. We do all our sensitive activities, and then we ship a binary product off to the US or Germany to do the actual execution of the translation. Okay. Sometimes we do it in Singapore, but that infrastructure is four times more expensive than our infrastructure in the US and Germany. But we have certain regulatory requirements for some customers where they will tell us this data cannot leave Europe. Or in the case of e-discovery, this data cannot leave Japan, otherwise the US government may subpoena it. Department of Justice may subpoena it because it's in their jurisdiction all of a sudden. So we use cloud in a very different way. We've built our own dynamic management system that ties all that together. Okay, we can distribute and deploy systems very, very rapidly based on customer requirements. So my closing thoughts. Buckminster Fuller is one of my favorites of all time. Okay, we're all called to be architects of the future, not its victims. Don't fight forces, use them. The knowledge that you can gain and the actions you can take from that knowledge by leveraging language as a key pivot point to data is massive and greatly underutilized and underestimated. And I'll leave you with that. Thank you very much.